Hey guys, welcome to Overcrest. I'm Chris.
And I'm Jake.
And it seems like kind of like a Fetter kind of day, doesn't it?
It certainly does.
Doesn't it seem like a Fetter kind of day?
You know, I'm excited for a little pep in our step because Lord knows.
Joel Fetter. I know I mentioned this last week.
What's
that? Dude, you need a freaking haircut.
I know. I was going to get one this weekend and it didn't work out.
Your
I was going to say
like
this week.
Happy to see me.
Jake needs a haircut.
Holy dude.
It's a lot.
It is. Although we were over, I was over at your house and your wife did ask if we all wanted our heads shaved.
Right. She did. Yes. And I said I wanted a haircut and she's like, sure, I'll just buzz y'all. And
yeah, well, you need one.
None of that happened.
You look ridiculous.
Absolutely ridiculous. You too could see how ridiculous I look if you were on a YouTube or Spotify, where of course all of our episodes have video to go along with.
Anyway, so Fetter's coming on. He's got a story he wants to tell. He had an interesting experience out on a press junket, drive. And he wants to share the story. Plus, we haven't talked to him in a while. I thought it'd be fun to hang out. So he's going to be coming on.
Do you know anything more about like what
I do,
press
but I'm just gonna,
junket this was?
Yeah, it's the Chevy Colorado like off-road ZR something or another.
Yeah, the new ZR2 they're
releasing.
Yeah,
ZR2.
Which is really cool looking.
So is the Colorado like a Ranger? Or is it a Maverick? It's a Ranger, right?
It's a Ranger. Yeah, Maverick is actually quite small. I do really still like that truck. The more I'm seeing them around, I like the styling of it.
One. Yeah, I love it. I love the interior. I've ridden in one now. I drove about 60 feet. It was a great experience.
Okay. Very good for those 60 feet. Because our friend Matt has one.
He does. And I parked it. I moved it and then moved it over here. Uh-huh. And that's how I can give you my review that it's a great truck. I just moved it like 10 feet.
That's good. Well, I imagine it doesn't have a dial for like gear selection, does it?
Yeah, it does.
No.
It's got like a little.
It does?
Yeah, everything does
really?
Now.
That's so dumb. That was Dodge's thing.
You know what's
on their
great?
Trucks.
When you got in my van, or our, I just called it my van.
It's not our van. Despite you driving it now, because you don't have any working vehicles.
I do. The red Mercedes works, by the way.
That one does work.
The title for it. So that thing will be for sale as soon as the title gets here. That thing is downing the road. DTR. That thing is DTR as soon as possible. It's just
you're
too
selling
slow.
The red car.
I am. It's too slow.
This is news to me.
I know. I've been thinking about it from the second I got on the freeway and I drove it, and you get up to like 80 miles an hour. I want to drive 80. This isn't 1976 where the speed limit's 55. I need to be able to do 75, 80 miles an hour, and at 80 miles an hour, that transmission is at 4,500 RPMs.
Okay.
That's a lot of revs for an old. No, the motors handle the revs fine.
It's just loud, buzzy, not happy.
I hate this motor so much right now. We could talk about this whole thing.
We should.
It's too slow. It's 0 to 60 in like 15 to 17 seconds, which is a very long time. So that thing will be for sale. It's decent. Air conditioning works. I think it'll be an okay sale. What do you think that thing's worth?
I have no idea. I was just thinking this is another item on the list of Chris's very short car ownership experiences.
Yeah. The experience was dragging it, no title, no keys, into a running car that I would drive it wherever. I think the thing seems pretty reliable.
Just not 80 miles an hour.
You can. It does.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Hold on.
What?
You swapped out the diff or are going to be swapping out the diff on the white car.
No, I have one. I have another one. I already got one.
I'm saying it has the same tall diff in the red car.
I already have another diff. Like I have another one that I'm
No, I know. That's not where I'm going. Where I'm going is you could change out the diff if it's the taller gears so it doesn't rev as much at high RPM.
And it's already slow.
I see what you mean.
You understand. It's already really slow. It's going to just be a total slug. it's not Pinto slow, but so I went back and I read some old reviews.
Okay.
And I wish I could pull it up. But basically the consensus was the reason this car came out is that, you know, Mercedes was just selling V8s. You could not buy this car. This car was available in Europe. You could get the 280, 1976. You could get the car in Europe, but you couldn't get it here. And then the gas prices and the gas stuff all started to happen. They're like, oh boy.
Yep.
So then they brought this car over, and the consensus is like, you get an extra couple miles per gallon better than the V8, only because you just are flooring it everywhere.
Oh,
you go.
I suppose. Yeah. It's not powerful enough to.
It's not powerful enough.
Yeah. You have to always be in it.
You have
And it's a heavier car, isn't
it? It's 4,000 pounds. It's slightly over 4,000 pounds with 150 horsepower.
Not a light car. No. Okay.
It drives great. There's no clunks. There's no, it doesn't wander. It drives straight.
Yeah.
It's like, makes no, I mean, it is a solid
car. The windows
work. The windows roll up and down.
Chris.
The air conditioning works. This is
yes.
for sale. I think it's probably worth like $3,500.
Sure. That seems fair to me. Did you polish the rest of the car yet?
It's all polished. Yeah, I did the whole thing.
So the door also matches?
No, the door. Well, it's define match.
Okay,
I guess
is before you like totally ignored the passenger side door.
Oh, I did not ignore it. That's just as good as it gets. Yeah, there's it. The paint is all crazed and dry and crackled.
Okay,
so it needs.
I didn't know if that looks.
It could use a door. It could use a door, and the inner door card is like fucked up.
Okay,
so I wanted to get a new door. I'll probably
now
get
it's
a new
down
door.
To $3,400.
Yeah, sure, $3,400. Yeah, I'll take that. Bring it over. You know, no problem at all. Oh, dude, I'm.
Are you selling it with the Pentas on it?
No, I will not. I'm going to keep those.
$3,300.
With the Pentas, I would sell it for $4,500, which would be a good deal because those Pentas are probably worth $1,000. Plus, they got brand new Nokian tires on them, which are great since I had to drive the thing around the snow since it is still snowing.
It just, yeah.
Even
winter
today,
has not ended, turns out.
It will not die. It is the winter that will not die.
Be
I have been
like
working
the shortest summer ever
on this thing.
Yes,
me.
The white driven to death Mercedes,
which has put me in like a confused state. So it ran pretty good. Like I think it ran pretty good, but I know now that it's lean up top, so I think it's running out of fuel. I took it for a little spin, and it's running out of fuel. It goes almost fully in like the three dashes under wide open throttle. I'm like, ooh, that's not good.
Three dashes meaning on the wideband?
Yeah, on the wideband gauge. So it's like full lean.
Oh, outside of even like being able to measure.
Right.
When you say three dashes. Okay.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly what's going on there. It was like 13, and then I turned the car around and came back, and then there was just none. Like, I don't understand what's going on
there.
That's
odd that it would go to three dashes. I don't think that's correct, because my gauge will read like up to 20-something.
Exactly. So does this one. So I bring the car back.
Okay.
I'm like, what's going on here? Like, so
back
I have
from
the
where?
Drove around the block.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah, down the street. So I bring it back. We'll just go through this, Sega. Okay. So I bring it back I'm like, okay, I got to figure out why this is too lean. So I pull out the synchrometer and I just want to check everything, make sure everything's still in sync. And it is, except for one cylinder. You know, when you plug a synchrometer into a car, which is basically, so a synchrometer measures vacuum, and you stick it on the velocity stack, and you can see how much air is pulling into the engine.
Correct.
Okay? So that you're measuring the vacuum power of one cylinder.
Yes.
And there's all, it doesn't matter how it's measured, whatever. It's a little fan in there, it pulls it through, and it pulls up a little needle, blah, blah, blah.
Yep. Inches of mercury, but yes.
What?
That's the actual measurement.
Oh, yes. Yeah, it's kPa or whatever, right? Kilopascals. Well, not mercury.
There's two different. I gotta look at this.
Yeah, you're thinking of a gauge that actually blocks off the entire velocity stack and has a tube coming out of it.
No, but that, I'm just talking. That is a measurement of vacuum. Is inches of mercury.
Yeah, sure. Whatever you say. That sounds fine.
Jesus.
I was gonna grab it. I think it's kilopascals is what it's measuring.
Okay, fine, whatever.
So I go to cylinder two. So I plug it in cylinder one. And it's measuring 4 or 5. I don't even give a shit what the measurement is. It doesn't matter. 4 or 5 is the number. And you can see it. You can see the cycle. You know, you can see it vibrating. You can see the compression. You can see it vibrating, moving back and forth.
Kilograms per hour, actually.
Okay. KPH. Fine. Thanks for that nobody cares about. So I plug it into cylinder two. And I plug it in cylinder one, pops right up immediately. Like, whoop, boop, shoop, shoop. Yep,
okay.
Working great. Plug it into cylinder two. It just comes up and it just stays there.
Okay.
Like it does. It's not vibrating at all. It's not doing anything. Comes up to 3 instead of 5. I'm like, what the hell? So I go, huh. So I take my hand and I mm-hmm. put my hand over the velocity stack, completely
right,
blocking
just plugging
the air.
Off air. Yeah.
Engine does not change at all.
That seems odd.
Very strange. I'm like, okay. So then I grab some brake clean. Yep. And I just spray it in there.
Which I'm glad we're going through this because I have several things I want to correct.
And
you're so
and you're,
brake
no,
clean.
You're, stop.
First of all, brake clean is not flammable.
You are incorrect. Some brake clean is flammable. Some is not. Non-chlorinated okay. brake clean is not flammable. Chlorinated brake clean is flammable. So yes.
Okay.
Brake cleaner is flammable. And it says extremely flammable on the can.
Okay. Yes. I just wanted to make sure you were using the right type.
Okay.
In order to
break time,
that.
I'm going to grab a can and we're going to look at it together.
Oh my goodness. Okay. You didn't want to grab the synchrometer and it's not kph. KPH is kilometers per hour. Totally different measurement than kilograms of air per
okay,
hour.
Let's take
which
a look
is,
at
of
this
course,
can
a
here.
Volume.
So Jake said brake cleaner is not flammable. Rate. You want to correct me right here. Yep. Let's see if
can't
we
see
can.
That.
You can't no. see that. I'm no. going to read this to you. It's danger.
Majority
poison.
People aren't watching anyways. Yes.
Well, about 30% are now. Poison may be fatal or cause blindness if swallowed.
Wait,
do not,
if swallowed, it
if
causes
swallows,
blindness?
Extremely flammable.
Okay.
Extremely flammable.
Yes.
Vapor harmful. Yes. Eye irritant, as you learned.
Well, I did learn that this weekend.
Sprayed yourself
yeah.
in the eye. What's ironic is you sprayed yourself in the eye right before I came over, and we'll talk about yep. that too, I'm sure.
Yes,
and
we did.
What did I tell you like three times when I was
watch your
over?
Eyes. Be careful.
Please watch your eyes. Be careful.
Watch your eyes. Yeah.
And then
and we
you
realized
really...
you have glasses on,
I do.
So this doesn't happen to you.
I know. That's why I was specifically saying watch your eyes, because I know you don't
right.
have glasses on. Okay. So
that's correct.
Highly flammable. I
okay,
use this.
Good.
You can use it
thank
as starter
you for
fluid.
Clarifying.
This is how I got the red Mercedes started, is I just sprayed this into the carb initially just to see if it would fire. The first
yeah.
thing. Okay.
Yeah.
Because there was no fuel because I drained it all. Okay. So nothing happens. I spray this right. into cylinder two. Literally nothing. I'm like,
okay,
what the fuck?
Yeah. That's
so then
not
I
good.
I immediately I pull the spark plug wire off,
right?
And I grab a pliers, pull it off, and of course I like touched it, like
yeah.
Okay.
So there's power to the plug.
There's power to the plug. I'm like, okay, strange. So I turn the car off. I go get a different plug wire and a different plug.
Yep.
And I put that on there. Same uh-huh. thing.
Hmm.
So I'm like, okay. The plug is completely dry. Okay.
Oh.
The plug is completely dry.
Really?
Dry.
Okay. So it's not like, getting any fuel.
No fuel. So I'm like, well, what? What is going on? There's no fuel. How is that possible? So I
yeah.
take the top of the float bowl off.
Yeah.
The top of the, there's fuel in there. Okay.
Okay.
Check the float level. It's fine.
Okay.
Okay. Put it all back together. Go turn the key. All of a sudden, I smell gas. I come running back over and I look and the whole, there's gas pouring
out of
the
front of the velocity stack.
Well, it's tilted. So it's just flowing okay. into the engine. I'm like, oh
yeah.
my God. Oh my God. What is happening? How can I have no fuel?
No fuel. And also all of the fuel.
And I'm like, what is going on? And I'm like, I don't understand. It has spark and it has fuel because I sprayed this brake cleaner in there. And it
right. So
change.
Even that would have worked. Yeah.
Okay. So why is that not igniting? Like what, mm-hmm. what's going, like, I still don't understand exactly what's happening. So I'm like, okay, there must be no compression.
Okay.
And I'm like, let me try a few other things first. I'm like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm just going to grab the compression tester
sure.
and I'm going to test it. So I plug it in, yes. test it, 90 PSI. I'm like,
which is not ideal.
Oh, bad. It's bad. It's
yes.
dead.
Yes.
I'm like, okay. So then I test all of them, all mm-hmm. of them except one were exactly 90 PSI.
Exactly. Really?
All of them. And I'm like, okay, that means I probably, in my head, I'm like, that means I bent some valves or something. Like,
right.
they're all down. Sealing up. Something's wrong. I'm like, all right. So I quit at that point. I was
okay.
like, I'm like, okay. Well, I grabbed the camera and I peeked in there and I saw the witness marks on the pistons, top of the pistons.
Yes.
Of a strike. And I know you're super concerned about this. And I go, well, there you go. That's it.
Yeah.
I'm like, this, their valves are bent. It's fucking over.
Done.
Done. It's done. I'm like, okay. what am I going to do? So then I go and I sit on my couch and I feel sorry. I got a little couch over there. It's like a like a psychiatrist couch or something. I go over there and I lay down to think.
Your self-therapy couch.
My self-therapy couch. It seriously is like the most comfortable place in the house. You put your feet up, you lay down.
It's just so worn. You just sink into it.
Oh, it's perfect. It's so perfect. Everything has happened on that couch. Everything.
I suppose.
It's an amazing, it might as well be a casting couch at this point.
Oh my God, no.
So
no,
like,
we're not going there.
I don't understand. Like, I'm laying here and I'm like, I don't get it. I don't understand how it would bend the valves. I don't understand. How would that happen? And then I'm thinking to myself, if it bent valves, it would have no
compression.
Because if the valve is bent, all the compression leaks out. It's
correct. Yeah.
You just have none.
You can't make any compression.
And it won't run if you bend valves. The car will not run.
Good.
And it ran and idled really very quite nice. It ran great. I'm like, okay, I don't understand. So then I go and I grab some oil and I put oil in each of the cylinders.
Right.
I go
to try to seal things up.
Yep. Try to seal things up because I had been redoing the linkages. Right.
Prior to this, you were futzing with the carburetors.
Because I put the poly mounts on, which raised the motor up, which means the linkage was running into the hood.
Yes. All
right. I'm like, okay. So I'm going to put oil in there.
Which you shortened one linkage.
I removed one. I removed it completely.
Well, first you tried shortening one linkage arm, which you literally just changed the length of the fulcrum. So it would
have
been
but you can change the length of the rod too. So there's different things you can do to change.
I know, but that still doesn't work.
I go through these processes because you can change the length of another. You can also change the lengths of the other ones.
Right.
So you can shorten one all of them. And then shorten all of them, you know, and there's ways to do this.
Anyways.
So anyway, I did fix that. I did move the linkages around. I got everything. Now I only have two throttle rods, which is great. You know, super nice.
That is cool. Yeah.
And it works. But that whole time, it was just like operating the throttle over and over and over again.
Which is, of course, just pumping fuel in.
Pumping fuel. And it doesn't come out the front. It just goes right down the runners into this combustion chamber. And I'm like, it'll be rich for a second. And then it'll flush itself out and whatever.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's true. I drove it up that's after I did that. Okay, I'm trying to get my process started. So I drove it after I fixed all that, and it was pretty rich, and then it just got leaner and leaner. So I think things were pretty flooded out because I just literally drove it up the street and back.
Okay.
So it got leaner and leaner, and pretty soon it was just like, and it wasn't running well. I'm like, so that's when I started doing all the other tests and stuff like that. So anyway, so I pour the oil in there because I'm like, maybe they'll wash the cylinder walls off. Pour the oil in there. Boom. 150 PSI, which is right where you want.
On all of them?
I did four. And then I'm like, you know what? I'm not going to keep doing this.
It seems good. Okay.
Yeah. Even number two, which wasn't doing great.
Right. Okay.
Got to 150 PSI. I'm like, this is great. Now what? So then I'm like, okay, well, what's going on? Why don't. Now I have so I turn the key on, there's gas pouring out of the carburetor. What is happening? What is happening? So I pull the float out and I check the float. I blow into it. Yeah, it seems to be working okay.
Okay.
But maybe it's not adjusted. So I check the adjustment. It still just does it. It just, whatever it is, I don't know how this happened or what the coincidence of it is. The needle and the seat are not keeping fuel from flooding the carburetor. Or I can't figure. I don't know why else.
And it's only that one.
It's that one carb, yes. That one carb is doing that.
I mean, nothing changed with what fuel pump are you running? Like, do you have a fuel
pump? It's like
a
2 to 4 PSI pump. I don't have a regulator.
Okay,
it's
so it should be
fine.
PSI.
It's fine.
Yeah.
The other two are fine. The other two carburetors are fine. So this one, obviously, it's just, it is the loner carburetor. So I got the other two as a pair.
Oh.
And this one is kind of a mystery. So.
Okay.
I got a new needle and a new valve for all of them. So I'm just going to replace all three and just have, you know, all three replaced, and that's kind of where I'm at.
Okay.
It's kind of where I'm at. However, there is one other question I had or thought I had on that cylinder number two, reading low.
Right.
It is also hooked up to the brake booster.
Exactly.
So I don't know exactly if that could cause this like low signal. If that could
if
the check valve is
the signal. Right?
Right.
So what I would do,
there's a there is a check valve there. But if the check valve failed,
you have more volume.
Correct.
You know, throughout that.
Correct. So I'm just thinking, well, that could have a lot to do with it as well. However, here's another variable that I forgot to mention.
Okay.
When I was trying to figure this out, and it was low vacuum, I took my infrared thermometer.
Yeah.
And I pointed it at each exhaust manifold because this thing is super sick and has headers. So I can go to each one individually.
Super sick. Yes.
That cylinder is 200 degrees cooler than the rest.
Right.
That so makes it's, sense. It's not doing anything.
Right.
It just isn't.
Yeah. And it was not firing.
Yeah. So it might just, or it's completely washed out and that was flooding. It's very possible that was completely flooding the whole time, but the spark plug was dry.
Ignite.
So like, what the fuck? The spark plug was dry.
How long was it since you pulled the plug after it was running?
Like, it would stay wet.
Okay.
I mean, but the top of the piston looks wet.
See,
I don't know,
weird.
Dude. I know.
That's weird.
It's a lot of weird.
Replace the float seat. You know, the valve.
I'm gonna replace the float seat. I'm gonna change the oil. Get rid of the oil.
That's a good idea too.
You know what? Hold on.
Now what is he doing? See, this is what's terrible about if you are watching. The car is literally right behind him, so he's just going back and forth.
So judging by the dipstick,
checking himself,
looking at the dipstick.
Yeah,
there's probably at least a quart of gas in there.
That's not
way over level. So yeah, there's obviously got a lot of fuel put in there. So
I
didn't drive it much.
Change the oil, do the carb float seat, and then also, unplug that vacuum line and plug that for testing.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
You know what I mean? Because I am curious what it reads that afterward, and you know, it probably wouldn't make a huge deal while it's actually running and idling. You know that you're not getting the same vacuum on that cylinder.
Yeah,
but for testing,
I might want to just plug it off and get I was going to do a electric vacuum pump on the Trooper.
And right, because diesel.
Because diesel. Why don't I just do that on this too? Chad, my buddy, who's an expert on Volkswagens, obviously.
Yep.
Said that some of the Jettas have an electric pump, like an OEM electric vacuum pump.
Oh.
And if I could get an OEM high duty electric pump, rather than some shitbox thing off Summit, get an OEM
I see what
good
you mean.
Stuff.
Yep.
Put that in there, and then just shit can the like not have that.
Your brakes will variable be a heck of a lot better too. More assist. Well,
brakes on
you're
this
probably
are,
not
well,
getting a ton of vacuum.
Oh, it's fine.
Okay.
Everybody says that, and they're
really?
Wrong. Yeah, everybody says that they're wrong. I'm so tired of you need a vacuum manifold, and no, you don't. You know, it's fine. The brakes are fine. They work great. I've never had any problems.
Yeah.
Ever. It's not an issue. Stop talking about it.
Got it.
That's kind of where I'm at.
Through everything, I do agree with you that those witness marks probably were from the prior owner. And you said that head was recently just rebuilt.
Had so clean.
Like no miles on it.
Very possible.
Wasn't driven.
Barely.
Because otherwise, I was like, if it was from before, wouldn't you see carbon deposits there? It wouldn't be so shiny. From that mark, but maybe if it was super low mileage, that's just you still see it. I don't know. Well, I hope the best for you.
Yeah,
because that's
I don't really know what's going on. You know, I've got some stuff to figure out. I'm to the point now where like I was laying there going, "What can I do?" I'm like, I could take these carbs off, take the manifolds off. I could sell them for thousands of dollars,
and then what?
And then just do like I thought about doing like a C36 AMG engine.
Jesus.
You know, and just doing
so swapping another different motor in.
Swapping a different motor in, but it would just be like OEM. It wouldn't be tuned, it wouldn't be anything.
I know.
Kind of like kind of boring. You know.
Yeah. This setup is so cool with the AMG rally cams and the like super unique one of one.
It's all period correct shit. Like everything there is
side drafts. So good.
And I love that.
Yeah, one of our buddies too was like, I don't know why you didn't just, you know, put in probably that same motor that you're talking about, the C36, whatever it is, AMG. And I was like, because, like, no, this is so cool running the side draft carbs and so unique. So
yeah, it's all about the story that you're able to tell and create with the car, right? I mean, there's easy ways to do everything, right? The easy thing to do would be to put an LS in it.
Well, the easy thing would be not modify it at all.
True.
I know what you're saying.
It's all about the story that you're generating for the journey you're going to have this is an important discussion, you know, but this is the, what you do with the car and what you choose to do, especially initially, the choices that you make are going to dictate the journey that you're going to have with the car.
Sure.
No, it dictates the story that you're going to have and what kind of story you want to have. Would it be easier to put a C36 AMG motor in it in the first place? Probably. Likely. Seriously likely. Very much easier.
At this point, yes.
Especially at this point. Even not at this point, just initially. You could just bolt the motor in. I don't even know if it bolts in, but you can make mounts, whatever. Well, up some mounts, bolt it in there, and down the road the car.
Right.
But it's not as special. You know, you're not depending on what level you're at. Okay. So like for me to do that is not as challenging. I've swapped so many things. You know, I've owned so many cars.
Well, if it's all the challenge you wanted, you're definitely challenging yourself.
Yeah, did not predict this. It depends on what your baseline is. So if a baseline is a guy that's never done any swaps before, doing a C36 AMG would fucking rule. That would be an amazing swap. That would be so cool for someone to go out of their comfort zone and do something like that. Okay,
that's
awesome. For me, I didn't want to. I wanted to do something really, really special. Really unique,
and this is for sure,
and kind of like I don't know what the word for it is, but right up my alley, which is like side draft carburetors. I've always loved them.
Yeah, you know, period
doing
correct.
Something unique. Period correct. I want it to look like something that could have always existed. You know,
right.
if this could have been a thing. You know, this could have been something that was done back then. It could have been
absolutely
not some swap from the future. Right. Like, you know, like, whoa, look at this. You know what? I always thought of what it would be like to grab like a Daewoo or like a Kia Rio and like travel back in time to like 1952 and drive around in Germany and just blow everybody's doors off. And they'd be like, what is that spaceship looking thing that you've got there? Oh,
why would you pick a shitty new car?
I don't know. It's just the alluding to the fact of how insane new cars are.
Yeah.
I mean, they're so insane compared to the old stuff that we have. It would just be, they'd probably burn you at the stake. You'd be like, what is this wizardry?
It's witchcraft.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's it for me. I don't really have any more updates other than that. You know,
you came over to my place yesterday, a couple days ago, and we finally got the correct 944 turbo motor in my 944 turbo, which is a nice big milestone. That felt
I only
really
had
good
to tell
to
you to slow
done.
Down like two or three times this time.
Yeah. And I realized what it is like I get frustrated that I'm not where I'm at or I'm not making the progress I think I should be. So I'm like, all right, gotta speed up. Gotta
here's
get
the,
there.
Here's the thing though. Your arrival from point A to point B is never going to be a straight line.
And no, you're right.
And it's always going to be whatever it's going to be. Okay.
Yeah.
So maybe it is A to B is a straight line. And you're thinking of it as like a line that kind of goes forward and goes backward and goes forward and comes backward. But no matter what you do, you're going to be following whatever that line is. And you getting frustrated and wanting to get through these squiggles and these backwards and these setbacks and the successes faster. Because you feel like you're not
going
to
make
progress.
Anything better.
It doesn't make anything better. And if you're trying to speed through it, you're actually making it worse.
Because, yeah, you're probably right.
Because you're not. I notice that you tend to be this. And this is pot calling the kettle black. Okay.
Okay.
Because I am very careless. You're very like you're very cavalier and you're like moving things around. And like we're jacking the motor up into this 951 and your dad was there on the top going stop. And you're like, why? And you're just like because you're about to break the headlight cross member off with the distributor output shaft. And you're like, no, it's fine. Just keep. No, stop, dude. Stop.
Yeah, you're right.
And
a lot of that. Yeah, it's lack of patience. Right.
Yeah. And I don't know. Are you the same way when you're alone?
No. Well. I don't know. I think it's that I'm at a point of frustration when that happens, right? Mm. So it depends. And a lot of times, like if you guys weren't there, I would maybe have taken a break because I'm frustrated.
Yeah.
And not gone forward. But I also feel a little bit like, okay, everyone's here. Let's get it done. I'm wasting people's time, maybe is a little bit in the back of my head too, right?
Yeah.
Like, let's go. Come on.
Nobody's there to work on the car.
You're right.
Nobody cares about the car.
Yeah, it was you,
I mean,
it was Colin, it was my dad was there. It was great having a bunch of eyeballs so you can actually
I just wanted
see
to hang
where
out.
Things are going.
That's it.
Yeah,
I
didn't
like I wore dirty pants this time in case I had to do something.
That was probably smart.
Yeah, but I really just wanted to watch you spill diesel all over the floor and laugh at you.
Oh my gosh, I forgot about that part. So I'm like at the point now, I'm like, okay, the motor's in. What else? Like, we're getting there, right? We're getting to the point where it can go back together and we're getting close to starting it up. I'm like, all right, what else has to be on? I'm like, oh crap.
I'm disappointed that you don't have more parts
in the tank.
How do you not have more parts for this car ready to go?
Here's the problem. I don't know what else it needs until I'm there.
You got another car parked right next to it as a reference point.
Yes. But like I in the back there, the reason I drained the tank is I got to take this whole shield off the tank so that I can see like what parts of the fuel pump assembly are back there. I have no idea. There's all these fittings that cost $100 each for the Porsche part that I don't know if they're back there yet. And I need to go do that now. That's what I want to do this afternoon is take a look because there's so many things that were luckily like the electrical. I disassembled the fuse box and everything. Luckily, that was not hacked apart, which I am so thankful for that. Yeah. But there were so many question marks going into this. Like what was done to this car to put the stupid
everybody.
Volkswagen diesel
yes.
in a 944 turbo that was perfectly good and running at the time.
That's what's funny
the
is that the guy said it ran fine.
Yeah, he's like, oh, it ran fine.
And not like a high performance one either.
Oh
like
no!
A 1.6
yeah,
turbo diesel.
I forget what the it was a 1.8, but
also
oh,
it was an AAZ, the 1.9.
It was the predecessor. Yeah, 1.9. But yeah,
okay.
It was the
so it was a
different
mechanically
version,
injected
1ZU, I think. Yeah, well, which okay. he put a different mechanical pump on, which was also super expensive. It's like a Rover retrofit.
I understand what he did. Okay.
Yep. Okay. Yeah. It's a Rover pump that's a retrofit because he wanted whatever. It's higher performance pump. It can flow more. But it's just the whole thing is so dumb. It was so not my thing.
Do you wish you would have? You know, I talked to you while I was there. I'm like, dude, this has been a long ways from picking this car up to where you are with having
this
motor
in right now. It was a big project. I know. I was like, this has been a big project.
So here's the question.
Yeah.
Are you glad? Or are you like, oh, I should have just sold this thing? And
I'm holding out to actually drive it with the correct motor in it.
How do you feel right now, though? Do you feel like you're still on this good journey that's going to end well and you're excited?
There's been a lot of investment into it. You know, it's not even the money because I got the thing for dirt cheap and, you know, still throwing, which is the only reason I don't feel bad about like throwing all this money into new parts on everything. But it's like, man, the time investment has been a lot. So I don't know. It's all been an experience, though. That's the way you got to look at things. Like, here's the other thing, too. Like, our buddy
I feel
and
like this is
numerous
your first,
friends come over.
This is your first really big project, from what I know.
I thought that, too. And then Nikki was like, do you realize how long you had that stupid MG?
Yeah, but that was
like...
You
pulled the motor out and you made a custom turbocharging setup for it that didn't exist and no one else had done. I did a whole bunch of body work on that car. I did a full interior. Like that, I kind of forgot about that project. That was pretty far done up, which apparently is for sale again now locally. So hit me up if anyone wants that thing. But yeah, no, it's definitely been one of the bigger car projects I've done, this 951. So I'm holding out judgment on, you know, whether it was worth it or not. But at the same time, here's the mindset I have, Chris, is worst case scenario, let's say tomorrow I'm just, for whatever reason, done with this thing. I could just say, someone come get it for whatever X amount of dollars that'll get it out of my driveway that day. And it's fine. Like I wouldn't have lost a ton of money. And I have other vehicles. Like, it's not the end of the day. I just got to look at it for what it is. This is a hobby, right? Mm-hmm. And that's a hobby car. And it's been fun and it's been an experience.
Yeah, I think that's awesome. I was thinking about how depressed I was when this thing was down yesterday. I was like laying on my psychologist couch over there. And I was
the
like,
fainting couch.
The
that's
fainting
what it
couch.
Is.
I was laying on the casting couch.
Yes.
And I thought to myself, I go, okay. Is this bad for me that I'm doing something that is causing me so
much
stress and anguish and financial ruin?
Yes.
Is this bad for me?
Right.
Like, and then I think to myself, like, should I even be doing this? You know, this is my thought process. Should I even be doing this? I screw up stuff all the time. Like, should I be doing this? like the 911 motor broke or whatever, and I didn't notice that the fuel gauge went to zero. So that's now it's my fault in my head.
Oil gauge, but yes.
Oil, yeah. Well, oil, yeah. And then this thing is like not really my fault, but like somehow it probably is.
Like, so you're in a still way, like, man, like, I'm not doing things right.
I don't know. I don't feel this way now. I'm like, yeah, it's okay. You know, people make mistakes, yeah, and you know, it's
kind of
a process. But at the time, you're just thinking like, man,
why am I doing this?
I'm doing this
to myself.
I am a moron. And then of course I go, well, I've made the entire me, right? The entire dimension that is Chris Kluel is
right.
This.
That is your persona.
It's not even my persona. It's become, I don't even know if I can, like, if I stop doing this, what am I?
Right.
So am I doing a potentially damaging thing
for most people?
I know, but am I potentially doing like something that's bad for my mental health because I'm too scared to do anything else? And I feel better now, but those are the thoughts that go through your mind because, dude, like, holy shit, if this thing needs an engine, I'm just like, holy fuck, you know? Like, I just like the, what am I doing?
Yeah.
So it's like all these, it gets hard, man, when like you get this deep into things and you've spent the amount of time I've spent on this car.
Time, dude, and money and yeah.
Yeah, and it's just like it cannot continue. It cannot continue financially, especially. It just can't. So the rally's going to cost more this year.
Oh, is that right? That's that's because of that, huh?
It has to. Like, I can't look. You know, look.
What?
Overcrest is what I do, right? It's what you do, it's what you do in a way too. I can't. This whole thing can't continue unless it starts to make more sense.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So like, yeah, if this is going to be the sacrifices that are going to be made, things have to start like,
well, or you can just not just shovel thousands of dollars into motors.
Here's the deal. Three projects, the 911, the Trooper, and this, all in one year.
Yeah, that's a
terrible
lot.
Mistake. Terrible
Way
mistake.
Too much.
Way too much. Way too much. Anyway. So you got your motor and your thing.
Oh yeah, I was draining
diesel.
What else
do you need? You were draining diesel, spilling it all over the floor. Got
spilling
that.
Everywhere. Not a fan of that.
Hey, did you know that? So you know how to, you know, this degreaser shit, right? That you spray the gunk stuff you spray on things and
like the motor degreaser.
Yeah. Did you know that you can put, this is something I learned from my grandpa,
diesel.
And, yeah. Diesel and dish soap makes an amazing degreaser. Diesel itself is great, but it doesn't have the viscosity to stick. It just kind of drips off, but you add Dawn dish soap to it. And that's what my grandpa would use to degrease tanks in Korea.
Wow. No kidding.
Because he was a diesel mechanic. So they would use diesel and soap to degrease. And
that's
amazing.
Really cool.
And it works really, really well.
Yeah, I was cleaning some stupid bracket or part the other day. And, well, just yesterday, because I had all of this diesel fuel now. And I was like, oh, why don't we use some diesel cleaner? It works so much better than like gunk degreaser. It's so much better.
Great.
I was like, what have I been doing? Wasting,
so you just put it in like a, you just put it in a bottle like this.
Yep.
You just mix it up, put it in a bottle like this, and then just
diesel and dish soap.
I don't know what the ratio is. You have to Google it or something.
Or just experiment.
Yeah, just experiment, and it works. It's in a great degreaser.
That's
all
good
over
to know.
The place.
That's a fun fact.
Know?
That's
you
a
don't
usable
wanna,
fact.
Here's the thing: is there's probably the degreaser. You know, you could probably get it in your grass, and it might be okay. If you get diesel in your grass. It's not good for your driveway. It's not good for anything.
Although
my grandpa didn't give a shit. I mean, this is the dude that would, like, his used oil, he would dump it in a 50-gallon drum and it was full. He would light it on fire in the 60s.
Oh, my God. Yeah. I mean, well, it's better than people who would just drain it down the, you know,
or
he
would bury it. Or he would just bury it in the backyard and cover it with sand.
I guess. Yeah. Well, I learned apparently that you said diesel can grow algae on it if you
leave
it long enough.
Yeah, diesel can.
Which seems odd.
Yeah, it's not. It does different things than gas does. It's got a different.
Yeah, you asked what else I need. I need exhaust components to get that bolted up. I need fuel pump, fuel filter, fuel pressure regulator. There's an OEM oxygen sensor that needs to be plugged into there. There's two crankshaft reference sensors. Those are the big ones. I need those for the thing to even start and run. I need all sorts of vacuum hoses because this thing is a mess. If this car is anything, it is miles of vacuum hoses.
Yes. Yeah, it's right around that period of time. Why?
It is. It's just, it's messy, right? It's just complicated.
I know, but there's a vacuum diagram on your, like, you can just look at it.
I know, I have the vacuum diagram, and I'm still looking at it going, what? Why? How does this go here, and this needs to go here, and then there's a Venturi pipe to make additional vacuum from the vacuum so that you can run your brake booster and all these other things. It's crazy.
It really just comes down to emissions.
Right. You're right. Yeah.
Yeah,
I don't know. So I need
that's pretty much.
I need fuel lines up front. I need other little O-rings, and then and put it all back together.
All right. Well,
I figure I'm about a week, realistically 2 weeks out from starting.
As long as you have the parts you need, you're going to discover more stuff missing.
I know I am. That's why I have an order ready to go here, but I haven't clicked checkout and deliver yet because I'm like,
just get it going.
I know.
You know,
I'm
going to
order it today.
$20
for sure.
Yes, order it, exactly. And then if you need more stuff, you order that. Just order when you need stuff, you order it. Because nothing sucks more than waiting for parts. Because at some point, it will be the last order.
Yeah, but you don't know when that is.
No, but you don't want to just be like, oh, I need this other thing, and then you have to wait. When you could just be starting the car instead of waiting another 3 to 5 days.
100%. All right, so we have some news we could talk about. Otherwise, we can just go straight to Joel.
Is it any good?
The news?
Yeah, what do we got? Anything interesting? I saw this thing about Land Rover. That seems to be not true. I don't know if anybody saw that.
Some misinformation that they were killing the Land Rover brand name, which isn't actually true. What they stated they're going to do is be basically taking the Defender and Discovery names and making them actual sub-brands. Right?
So spinning them.
So like we've seen, like with the Mustang is becoming a sub-brand now with
Corvette.
The Mach-E. Corvette is doing the same thing. Right. Ram is a very good example because that has become its own brand. It's not a Dodge Ram. It's a Ram now. So they're doing the same thing or planning on doing the same thing with the Discovery, Defender, and Range Rover.
Okay. So they're not killing off the Land Rover name.
Not killing off the Land Rover name. That's, I guess, a big news point.
Well, we'll see.
Another one, we talked a little bit about this. I think we mentioned this in the past, that Volkswagen has bought the International Scout name and rights.
Yeah.
So it's not international.
That was
but
a couple
it's the Volkswagen
years ago. Are
Scout.
They finally doing something?
So they are going to make basically a line of SUVs. It, of course, is going to be electric because that's all you can produce at this point going forward. So they said in 2026 launch date for the SUV. They also are going to have a truck later. Basically said it's going to be very similar and compete with the Rivian, like the R1 and the R1T. Which, by the way, so we've seen the Rivian pickup trucks. I just saw the first Rivian SUV yesterday.
Question. What do you think that thing weighs, the truck?
The Rivian?
Yeah. They weigh 7,000 pounds.
A lot of battery.
7,000 pounds.
Oh, okay.
The F-150 weighs like 8,500, between 8,500 and 9. Somewhere I was, I think Jesse was telling me, she heard on some like morning program or something, the parking ramps can't handle the weight of all the electric cars.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, let me Google this quick and see.
I didn't even think about that, but you're right. Because think about the density, right? It comes down to weight density. If you had all of these things parked together, that is a ton of weight.
Experts fear deteriorating parking lots could collapse under the weight of heavy electric vehicles.
You know, not to mention either road conditions in general, right?
Yeah, I was thinking about
that too. If the average vehicle is heavier on a trafficked road, like, roads are just going to degrade faster.
They're going to degrade. Have you ever been pulled up to a light and it's like the ruts where like trucks have been?
Yep. And it's from braking.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's from, I don't know, man.
Anyways, so yeah. The
infrastructure
Volkswagen,
damage.
Volkswagen's getting closer to actually launching the Scout EV sub brand, which is kind of cool. They are actually, as kind of like a big promo, they're sponsoring a vintage Scout and taking it down to the Baja for the Nora 1000.
Okay.
Which is kind of cool.
What does this thing look like? Let me look at it.
I don't even think we've seen renders.
Yeah, we haven't.
Like, I see illustrations of this is what it could be.
And
right?
It's horrible. And whatever they're coming up with is horrible.
It looks like a Rivian, is what I've seen every single one.
It's freaking Joey Mechanic drawing something.
Exactly. So I don't know. That's cool. I've always loved Scouts. I still kind of want an old International Scout short wheelbase.
Super boxy.
At some point. Yep.
Why that instead of a Bronco? Because you're such a Ford guy.
I'm not even a Ford guy. I don't know. I like Broncos too, but the International, it's weird, right? It's a tractor. It's made by a tractor company.
Yeah.
And that I would, mark my words, I would get it with the diesel in it because they sold them with diesels in it because it's a tractor. It makes sense.
You'd have to swap it though. You couldn't, you would not.
I think they were actually turbo diesels in those.
Fine, but they're probably awful. There's no way that you
could
tolerate.
Just crank the boost and modify it and put a bigger pump in it.
Okay. Sure, whatever you say. All right, let's talk to Mr. Fetter and hear what he's got going on. Before we get to that, what have you got for us?
Yeah, let's take a minute to talk about our sponsor, Automotive Anonymous, AutoAnon.com. They have an awesome selection of vintage motorsport posters. They also, coming soon, will have some models. They have enamel pins. They have books. They're going to have other apparel as well. But
lots
it's really
cool.
Yeah, all the posters featured on the site are original. They have many extremely rare pieces. Like I said, all these unique enamel pins are also limited editions. You got to check them out at autoanon.com. They're also on Instagram at Automotive Anonymous. It's just really cool. I've been scrolling through there because I'm like, I really do need to get one of these prints or posters. And it's just so cool that these are all vintage, you know, period correct. It's not reproductions anywhere on there. You know, when you go to the hardware store and you see these cool, like, old metal signs, they're all stupid reproductions. Whereas this is the original stuff. Chris just tripped on something in the background. So yeah, check them out. AutoAnon.com. Very cool. Kind of range the whole gamut. Oh, and there's the pin right there.
I got one of the pins right here. This is my little yellow bird.
Yep, the yellow bird.
There it is. Got a little bit of focus.
Focused.
There it is.
I like it.
It's I have it on on my workbench where all the cool stuff is.
I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So check them out. You can also use the code Overcrest. That'll give you free shipping on all the posters as well. Really cool guy as well behind it all. So we really
want
to support.
Come on, see us. He's going to be hanging out with us at Luft on Saturday night. We've got
You guys are having a little parking lot hangout.
Yeah, so if you check out the social, you'll be able to see where the meetup is and everything like that. And he's going to be hanging out with us as well.
Awesome. All right. Well, are you caffeinated, Chris?
Not really. Why?
Because we're going to have to keep up with Joel Fetter here in a minute.
We're going to have to keep up with Joel Fetter. All right, I'm going to take a break, and I'm going to get some coffee, and then we'll be right back with Joel. Mr. Joel Fetter, how's it going, my friend?
In the flesh.
I have taken 3 8 balls of cocaine. I'm ready to go. I'm going to be able to keep up.
And, we got to keep up with you, Joel.
Got to keep up. I'm ready.
It's a rare trait. Few can.
Well, it's just I have to chemically alter my body to be able to do it.
There you go. Yeah,
it's pretty good. We just spent the last 40 minutes talking about everything that's wrong with our project cars.
I follow Instagram. You're gonna need way more than 40 minutes.
Yeah. That was the abbreviated version.
That was the abbreviated
version.
Do you miss having some sort of like little thing to like detail on or tinker on, or because you haven't had anything the entire time I've known you? There have been no projects. You have the one car, but you don't really drive it, so it never really needs anything. So it doesn't really count. Do you miss having something that needs attention?
Yes and no.
Z doesn't count.
Yeah, I mean, the answer is yes and no, right? I've gone through periods where I miss my M5 and all that brought with it. But my life here and my life now is so different than the life I had when I owned that car, pre-kids and early kids. You know, now I live close to my parents and we're super close with them. Now I live by the lake house. It's not a flight away. It's a drive away. And so And work is busier than ever. So I think, and now my kids are involved in all the sports and all this stuff. I think that it's just a different stage of life. So while I don't even have time. I used to detail, like literally detail our cars every 6 months. I don't even have time to do that anymore. Like it's a time issue, right? Like,
But we do it to ourselves, right? It's not like you aren't making
that choice.
We choose what we do. You know, we choose.
Of course,
I
have no regrets. I'm not saying that I'm angry that I have kids and I don't have time for that stuff. Like, someday my kids are going to be out of the house and they're not going to want to hang out with me, right? They're not going to want to have me watch them play soccer or any of that stuff, right? Like, this is a stage. But every piece of life is a stage in that, right? And so we're just in that stage. So when you say, do I miss it? Of course I miss it, but I don't have time for it at the exact moment.
It's amazing that you mentioned that, bringing that up, where the kids won't need us anymore. I had that experience the other day and it really rocked my world, man. Like, my kids came home and I was like, hey, let's go. I don't remember. It was like, let's go to the hardware store. I want you to come with me. Hop in the car. Let's go. And they're like,
no,
nah. And they hop on their bikes and they roll their bikes away to go to hang out with the neighbor kids. And I was like, wow, I thought I had more time. I thought I had one or two more summers of time, but I didn't. Like, 8, 9 years old, 10 years old. That's it. That's it. It is over. My gravitational pull went from Jupiter to fucking Pluto in a year. it's crazy. So,
but that's the reality, right? That's what I'm talking about. I mean, we're still in this phase where my daughter wants me to watch her do gymnastics. My son wants me to watch him do soccer and all that stuff. But when we're home, right? Yesterday afternoon, they're out in the front yard playing who knows what. I don't even know. Literally, and you know, Karen and I are folding laundry and paying bills, doing adulting, right? And the kids, they're just on their own. They're just scootering around.
It's weird. So I feel like we'll have more time as we get older again. You know, I think this time gets like, you know, you're in your 30s and your 40s and there's no time, right? You're just always but I think as we get older, we'll have a little bit more time to do stuff. Anyway, so speaking of doing stuff, what have you been up to? What are you driving? Anything cool? What do you got in the driveway right now?
I literally, like 40 minutes ago, swapped. I'm on an electric stint right now because we're about to enter lake season and a bunch of electric cars just came out. So I'm doing a bunch of electric cars before we start heading up to the lake because we don't have a bunch of fast chargers on the way to the lake yet. I got rid of an electrified GV70 Genesis, which is literally a Genesis GV70, but they slid a big battery in it. And then that just left this morning. And then I got a Mercedes-Benz EQE in this gorgeous blue color that just pulled into my driveway.
Done.
No, hang on. That's like the next phase. They're done with it in the next phase. I can't keep up. I can't keep up.
Okay. Here's a question for you. The Biden administration had just announced they want everything to be 65% EV by 2020 something, like 28 or something like that. So we got Maybe 30. So we got 6-7 years. To go from 7% take rate to 67% take rate, which is an increase of 1,000%. Did the math. That's 1,000% increase. How?
So hang on. A couple things. One, I'm going to throw a bunch of numbers that you left out.
I'm not even going right or wrong. Like, I'm not saying it's right. I'm not
understand.
Saying it's wrong.
So plausibility. Okay. So today, most recent surveys say that people that are buying electric cars, or I'm sorry, just cars, right? 44% of people want their next car to be an electric car, right? So 44%. Let's just say that 44% don't actually buy an electric car, but like 44% of today's buyers want their next vehicle to be an EV.
I saw that chart, but the other 41% say never in my life, right?
Well, that's, you know, the guy standing on the lawn with the shotgun because people are going to take all of his guns.
Chris. That's 150 million people. That's 150 million people that are like never.
7% of the 7% number you said was nationwide. 19% of California sales last year alone were electric cars. I know that's not a good barometer, but it's a barometer of showing you where one part of the country is moving really rapidly, how quickly they're doing it, right?
Right.
And they've also got a lot more charging infrastructure than we currently have, right? Like the middle section of the country will be the slowest. We have the farthest distance between each other's houses. We have the farthest distance we drive, whether it's lake homes or skiing or whatever. And we have the least amount of infrastructure today. So it'll be like this, right? As it goes. So the 44%, 19% in California. And also, I also want to note that the numbers you just threw out are theoretical goals set for 2030 of new car sales. No one's going to come and take your gas-powered Golf R or his piece of shit Porsche that barely runs ever because he's doing things too quickly or any of those things. I follow Insta. I know exactly what's going on with you clowns. Even then I'll see you. But so Also, keep in mind the average car on the road today in America. This is average. He's 11 and a half years old. 11
that's
and a half.
Oldest,
I know you
that's
two
the oldest
are like
average,
outside
right?
the average.
Huh? That's the oldest average ever, isn't it? That's like really
It continues to creep up,
that
right?
That is crazy.
So hang on. The last time it did a major shift was cash for clunkers, cash for cars, whatever. Yeah. We buy your old crap, give you money. And so that was the last time there was a huge shift in that. But it has gone up, right? And there's multiple factors. Supply and demand, COVID and supply chain issues, cost of living, inflation, all these things, right? The average transaction price last month of a GMC Sierra 1500, this is a light duty, like an F-150, $71,000. That's people buying these things for that money. Poor life choices. I can't even. So when you ask me, is it feasible or is it possible? Look, anything's possible. Could 65% of consumers make their next their car purchase in 2030 being electric? If the infrastructure is there, so my prediction is that 2027 is kind of a turning point in infrastructure as far as how we view fast charging and what we need and what's out there. Like that's my current prediction. That's just Joel Spector's current prediction based on what I know. I think 2027 is a turning point for that.
Sure.
So if you look at 2027, you look at 2030.
Do you think that the manufacturers are going to allow people to not buy in? Because I think if you feel like a resistance, if there's a resistance from the public and these manufacturers have given billions and billions of dollars of research and development to, you know, different parts of their segments of their companies to come up with all these things, and they've invested, basically they've put it all on the line. Every manufacturer is all in. And if the American public doesn't decide, yeah, we're on board, I feel like there's no way that the federal government isn't going to start to squeeze through regulation, taxes, fees. You can't drive here. You can't drive there. More of like a European model, you know, like the Europeans are kind of.
I told you that years ago.
Right?
I told you that years ago. Look,
I feel like you say they're not going to take away my Golf R, but it will become
prohibitively expensive to drive gas cars. Sure.
Yeah. It'll be like, it'll have to be a choice where I really want to do it.
Yeah. So here's the deal. Like, first off, I think, and this is something that's not really talked about that much in the industry, but 2024's election is going to matter for this. It really is going to matter. Like I cannot emphasize that enough. Right. And
the
we're
EPA
not going down.
I don't want to go down the politics path.
Huh?
No, that's fine. The EPA is a unelected branch of government though. They don't really, you know, they get funded, I guess, but they kind of make their own rules outside of the scope of Congress and the president.
Yes, but you started this conversation by saying you just literally started this conversation by saying President Biden's goals and everything he just made, like you just started the sentence with President
For
Biden,
sure.
right? So like,
yeah.
If President Trump or President DeSantis or President Kamala or President Biden or whoever is the next president, right? I guarantee you it will impact everything we're talking about right now, like 100%.
Sure.
I do think that if Biden, or I think if a Democratic president is next again, right? I do think we'll be set on this path. I think if a Republican, depending who the Republican is, gets elected next, how quickly can things be rolled back? How quickly can roadblocks be put up? How much of a fight do they want? Which people do they want to fight with? Whatever.
Right.
But so like, if you look at GM, GM's interesting. We're all in on EVs. Future is EV. Everybody in. By the way, we're going to do like $18 billion and build a next generation V8. But like they're literally starting with a clean sheet, brand new next gen V8 right now. That's going to be out in like 4 or 5 years for pickup trucks and SUVs like Tahoe's, Yukon.
Like Toyota is positioning themselves for this like trip. Like the timeline is going to trip and stumble because something's going to happen, whether it's like the infrastructure's not there or the political agenda changes because Trump rolls things back or whatever, DeSantis, whoever becomes president, or Biden doesn't, whatever the case may be. Toyota is like right there, like, hey, we're making plug-in hybrids that are going to be great. So no matter what the scenario turns out like, Toyota is like, it seems like they're posturing themselves to be the guys that are there when the timeline stumbles.
I don't I don't know if I 100% agree or disagree with that. And here's why. So a couple of things. One, Toyota made a bad bet. Toyota, you know, VHS versus Betamax. They made a bad bet and they really thought hydrogen was going to win. That was the future. And then, look, the Japanese culture, I'm sure you know this pretty well. We're not wrong. We don't admit wrong. We are proud people, right?
We're going to follow this through. Yeah.
We got to follow this through, right? Yeah. I will go down with the ship. It was clear they were wrong. They doubled down on it. Still wrong. Doubled down a second time, which means third. Still wrong. 100% wrong. Got boxed in because we're wrong, but we can't do anything about the fact that we're wrong because culturally speaking, we were right. And so they're behind. Like flat out, they're behind. It is what it is. So now.
But we do have the Corolla GR.
Good car.
Yeah.
Good car.
Yeah. And the Yaris?
So not best car to buy material, but it's a good car. So best buy nominee material. So here's the deal though. On the 120 mile per gallon hybrid or 120 mile plug-in hybrids, it seems dumb. And here's what we wrote about this, by the way. We wrote about the news. We didn't write the editorial part of it because we don't do editorial news. We don't do that. In my opinion, it's dumb. So the ideal plug-in hybrid range is probably, like in perfect world, probably 50 to 70 max plug-in hybrid. And you have to understand a plug-in hybrid is like the worst of all worlds for an automaker and a consumer on some certain levels. On an automaker, it is the most expensive and complicated powertrain you can do. You're literally taking the expensive parts from both and putting them together in one car. And from a consumer level, you're taking some of the joy of an electric car or some of the better driving aspects of an electric car and combining them with, we still have complications and I have maintenance, but I'm making it more complicated now with more integration and more stuff to go wrong later. And so theoretically, they're a huge compromise, but they make a lot of sense for like you and me. It's like, you know, you drive never on gas Monday through Friday, then go to the lake and we use gas. Like theoretically, it makes a lot of sense, right? Towing, it makes a lot of sense. The average American drives 40 miles a day. The average American needs a 200 mile electric car. The average American is an idiot. The average American drives 40 miles a day, guys. Like, it is what it is. It drives 40 miles a day. People don't need 500-mile electric cars. People don't have 500-mile gasoline cars. Like, and they don't have gasoline stations in their home.
What are the stats? Because you probably know this off the top of your head. How many people have two cars per family? How many people are going to have the electric car?
I don't have the stat, but I don't have the stat, but I would tell you the majority, most households, like dual income, whatever, are two-car households. I will also tell you that so most charging, like 90% of charging for electric car takes place at home. Mm-hmm. 65% of America owns a single family home, which means 35% of America doesn't. Mm. So that 35% of America has a challenge that needs to be addressed, whatever that looks like, whether that is we have fast chargers at gas stations or we have fast chargers. What we need, fast chargers at Target, right? Fast chargers at grocery stores.
We talked to the guy from Charge America, and he says that's just basically going to be what it is. There's just
that's what it should be.
Everywhere.
I go grocery shopping for 30 minutes, my car gets charged if I'm on a road trip. I go to Walmart, and I go pee, and I get charged. Like, that makes sense.
Yep.
Are we going to have ever like city parking meters where it actually is a charger at the parking meter as well? Because
maybe,
and
they've tried that in Europe, but like the problem is that they're slow. Now you've got a lot of maintenance. Like what we really need is literally just
the parking meters don't even work, Jake. The parking meters are out of order, let alone the stupid charging stations.
Good point.
Give me a break. Yes.
We just need fast chargers at where you're already going for 30 minutes. It's really what you need, right? And then you have a level two in your garage or your house or whatever, and you charge overnight. Look, my sister's got a Model 3 because at the time her options were a Chevy Bolt or a Model 3. And so she got a Model 3. She had it for like 5 years. They charge like once a week. They drive it every day.
Wow.
They charge it like once a week. Grant, they live in LA. It's tepid climate, all those things. But again, they charge it once a week. They drive it every day.
All right, let's talk about some fun stuff.
Let's talk about something more fun.
I could go on to that. I'm very, very, very interested. I think it's a very interesting time to be alive and be into cars. I think it really is. It's like this great thing where classic cars are really easy to own. You can get parts for everything.
really easy to own is the guy
easy to own as we just
911 Benz that he can't get fixed running right. And if by the way, you want a Mopar? Good luck. I hope you're rich.
Well, whatever. I also got a car for free. I got a car that's free outside that I got running for $600 total. So
I've enjoyed watching that.
There is that. Anyway, so
Joel, you can buy it. You know,
yeah, it's already for sale.
I've seen the door panel. Sorry,
I'm replacing the door. Joel, what is so you're driving all this EV stuff right now? But you did get back from a press junket, a press drive in a Chevy Colorado, and it looked fun.
ZR2, right?
Yeah. Tell me about your trip out there.
I got to tell you, it was. In 13 years, great. There in this industry, there are always like certain trips that certain long vehicle launches that like go down and people talk about for a very long time. A lot of Land Rover trips, certain Subaru trips, certain trips go down and people talk about them for a very long time, like a decade plus. This will be that trip. Like this was probably one of the coolest, if not coolest, launch I've ever been on, and it's for a Chevy Colorado, which I know you're like. Look, there's a race, an off-road race, Baja, basically, off-road, that's called the Best in the Desert Vegas to Reno. It's about 500 miles, 520, give or take, depends on the year, that's Vegas to Reno. It's basically the most respected or best off-road Baja-style race in the U.S. Unless you want better, you're going to go to, like, Baja. You're going to go to Mexico, right?
Right.
And there's everything. There's water, mud, washout, sand, silt, rocks, rock climbing. We ran snow. Everything, probably not snow when they run it in the fall, but you know what I'm saying. There's every kind of terrain. And there's dry lake beds. Chevy said, this is an off-road race truck. We raced this truck. Granted, the race truck has like a full cage and 35s and whatever, but like we raced this truck. Chad Hall races this truck for them in this actual race. And they said, let's run the truck on the race route for the launch.
Oh my God.
Which that's ballsy, like legitimately ballsy. Like,
did they send somebody out to do it ahead of time?
Can't account for.
Like, did they send anybody out there ahead of time? Like, hey, you should maybe
Okay. The race is 520. The original plan goal called for 3 days at less than race pace. Yeah. And do about 420 miles. That was the original goal of this. Like we set out on Thursday morning and that's what we're going to do. That's not what we did, but that's what we're going to do. We ended at about 350.
Tell me about this truck first of all. So I have an idea what this truck is.
Yeah. So Chevy Colorado,
what's
Chevy Colorado midsize truck, right? This truck is, it's the Raptor version for them, right? So it's got passive two-stage multi-valve dampers for Multimatic. They're developed for racing. Multimatic developed these things for racing, and the first-gen ZR2 got these, and they developed them for this, and now all their ZR2s get these, right? They're passive shocks. They have spool valves, multiple chambers, basically the position-sensitive dampers. That's what they are, the position-sensitive dampers, which is pretty cool. They're very well-tuned. This truck has a 3-inch wider track than a normal Colorado, base Colorado. It is 3-inch lift than normal Colorado. It has mud terrain tires, and then the shock mounts, instead of being inboard like a normal Colorado and the last gen Colorado ZR2, they're outboard by the wheels, kind of like most other pickup trucks. So they're out of the way. It's got full-time four-wheel drive, front and rear lockers.
What engine is
all this? All the hardware.
What motor? What engine?
2.7 turbo. It's a four-cylinder 2.7, which, by the way, is the size of a V6 from Ford. So it's four cylinders, 2.7 liter. It's a big one. It's their high-output engine, so it's 310, 430. A lot of low-end torque, kind of like a diesel. So like stoplight thing rips. It's got Baja mode, which is the first for Chevy. They got Baja mode, which is pretty rad. And then
Okay, hold on. So what is the three modes? So Dodge, they have Baja mode. What does Dodge have? What does Ford have? The three
Ford
modes.
Ford also has Baja mode. Ford's got Baja.
What's a Baja? Okay.
Yeah, and Ram and the TRX has got something similar. I can't remember. I thought maybe there'd be some clever mode. I haven't been in a TRX in probably 4 years. I honestly can't remember the name. but it's similar.
So is this just their off-road mode? Like, what does this do?
So Baja mode, it's the first time that GM products had Baja mode. They have off-road mode with terrain and all these other things. Baja mode loosens stability control to the point where, I mean, I slid this thing and jumped this thing and I never felt stability control kick in. So for it to be in save your butt, I'd really like to know what too crazy is. Because I never experienced it and I did a lot of things. It also basically, it keeps the revs higher. It's more aggressive with the shifting and all that stuff. And then it also enables what would be my... So Baja mode, the Multimatics, and my third favorite thing is PSA, performance shift algorithm. In Baja mode, if you blip the throttle, it will enable what's called PSA. And it's a little green gear that comes on the gauge cluster. And that's how you know it's enabled. Basically, PSA, if Baja mode is like Red Bull in the fuel line, PSA is like a whole case of Jolt Cola. So basically, it will never let the RPMs drop below 2,500 RPM as long as you're in it. It's way more aggressive with the up and down shifts. And it basically keeps the entire engine on boil and you in boost the entire time. Not good for fuel economy, good for fun. And the only way out of PSA mode, is if you let the speed drop dramatically, which is eventually going to drop the gears dramatically. And eventually you'll go slow enough where the gearing will have to drop the RPMs below 2000. Eventually you'll hit 1500 because like you're going over a washout or rocks or whatever. It will realize that you've slowed down and you're out of it and it will drop out of PSA. And then once you're past these things, if you blip the throttle again, it will engage PSA again. My advice to GM was basically I would enable it to be a little longer than it is because not all washouts are that big. So if it's a smaller washout, I'm probably gonna get right back into it. But now I've got to blip the throttle again to get it back on. Then I can get back into it because you can't just get into it.
Take you out
of
the experience a little bit, huh? Kind of just like
pulls you out. It kicks you out because it thinks you're slowing down and pulling back, which you are. But if you're doing it for a short washout,
you've arrived at the mall that you're where you're getting your. You've arrived at what is it, Cabela's, to pick up like 76 cases of bullets. Yeah, got it. Okay, so this thing sounds indestructible. Tell me about your journey.
We called for 420-ish miles was the goal. We did 350 off-road miles, probably another 400 to 500. I was a little looser on my calculations on that on-road miles. This is in 3 days. So we were in the trucks like all day.
Where are you sleeping?
We started in Vegas, Red Rock Casino or whatever. I don't know. We spent the night, whatever. And then we left Vegas and we did the first day and we went to a town called Mizpah, which a lot of off-roaders know this town. It's got a really cool historic hotel. It was the tallest 5-story hotel when it was first created in the early 1900s. It was the tallest building in Nevada at the time. This is pre-Vegas, right? And then it's definitely haunted. Like if I had come back from dinner and there was a doll on my bed, I would have slept in the truck. They say it's haunted. I walked into it. Have you ever watched the show 1883?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I walked into a hotel that looks like I walked into a hotel in 1883. I'm like, nice. I have pictures. It is like that's the velvet awesome. And velour curtains and the old dude, they had a bank safe that you could walk through and tour. Like it was wild. It was wild. And like creepy and good water pressure, oddly, but creepy. And, yeah, I know. Right. But if the doll had been on my bed, I'm out. And then the second night off roading, we stayed like a Comfort Inn Suites. Dude, we were in the middle of nowhere. Fallon, Nevada. We stayed in Comfort Inn Suites, whatever. And then the third day we got to Reno and we stayed in.
Yeah. I thought maybe you were like sleeping in the desert or something in a tent.
No, we weren't sleeping. Because we had Wi-Fi so we could start doing our stories or start catching up on work or whatever. We had showers and all that stuff. But I mean, dude, we ate like some local Mexican place. This was an off-road trip.
They should have made you sleep out in the desert. I think they should have made you tent it out.
I would have slept out in the desert. I would have been down with that. Although I would have really kind of wanted to find out a way to work with Wi-Fi. But you also have to understand the desert is where you go to die. Like everything in the desert is trying to kill you. Everything is sharp, pointy, and moves quickly.
Yes. Like
pointy and moves quickly. I like that. Yes.
Yeah. So it was a rad trip. It was nine journalists or nine outlets, I should say. Journalists were allowed to bring a photographer or videographer or whatever. But there were nine trucks. There were journalist trucks. A lot of flats. I think we left with 24 spare tires when we pulled out of Vegas. I think we blew through 20-ish. A lot of sharp rocks. And I think Chad Hall said we were about 5 miles an hour off race pace. We were moving through the desert.
Wow.
Nice. We were cooking. And he's on 35s. We're on stock 33s. We were cooking through the desert.
That's cool.
Okay, so this thing is sounds like a fairly decent truck. What? So you guys are cutting up tires on these? What are sharp rocks? What are these tires?
Sharp rocks. Yeah, no, we were slashing sidewalls on sharp rocks, right? Oh, and you take the wrong line, you hit the sharp rock, whatever. Every truck drove out. A lot of trucks had flats. I'm the only truck that had more than a flat.
Uh-oh. So what exactly happened? Because you said you made 320 miles, which means you did not complete the journey.
No, we made 350. So we had to cut out two passes. One of the passes we went up, the snow got too deep, and Chad Hall on 35s got stuck. We had to dig it out. So it's like we're all on 33s. It's just too deep. We couldn't go. There was spring snow up there. So we had to turn back, and then we had to figure out another way out. And then the second day, there was another pass that you could see from like the highway had snow on it. And based on what we did the day before, we were kind of like, if we drive all the way up there and there's 3 feet of snow, we're going to turn around and go all the way back. We might as well just figure out a different route, right? So we did have to cut out a bunch of stuff. And then there were timing, right? It takes time to change tires. And we were not in a race. We took time. And so there's that.
Are you doing this yourself? Are you changing your own tires? Or do they have
So we had – there was a Chase truck that had all the parts. Like a bunch, we had like drive shafts and extra bolts and whatever. And that truck was piloted by a GM tech named Henry, whose job – he works at Yuma. They're Yuma Proving Grounds in Arizona, where literally his days are spent fixing shit the engineers break. That's his job.
Yeah. So he's following all you guys going – all these fucking yahoos drive. Yeah.
He thought it was the coolest thing. He's never done a press launch. GM's never done anything like this. He thought it was the raddest thing. So he was in the Chase truck and basically, look, there's nine journalists. This was nine outlets, nine journalists. It was all hand-selected, like very curated of like, these people know how to off-road. These people know trucks. These people know what they're doing. We don't need to worry about them being too slow or keeping up. Like it was very, this was not a multi-wave, we're inviting 50 journalists. Like this was a very different kind of thing, right? And so
the two press things that I've done was the M3.
Yep.
And then I did this this thing with my buddy Glenn where we went out to the Porsche Experience Center and got lumped in on this experience with a bunch of journalists. And I can tell you right now that both of those experiences were not like that. They had a bunch of idiot journalists.
Most launches
from
are.
Like, they had journalists from like local newspapers that are like crashing M3s at Road America, like into the wall. Like they have no experience whatsoever. And I'm like, is this what this is like? Why are these people even here? Why are they even being allowed to write anything about any of this? Why do these people even matter?
I'm not a PR person. I don't get to make any decisions. I'm not here to trash on anybody. Like the full line Colorado drive that happened like a month ago or whatever, 2 months ago. That my coworker Kirk got assigned and went to, that was like a 2 week launch, multiple waves, everyone from newspapers to radio to TikTok to YouTube to us to everything, right? Influencers, print journalists, us, everything, right? This was not that. Like this was, you're not going to crash our truck doing something stupid. You know, off-roading. We're running a race course. This is real. Like these were people from like Men's Journal, Gear Junkie, Us, Fastlane Truck. Like these are people that know trucks and off road. Like the people that know what they're doing, right?
What were you doing there?
Yeah, you texted me. You're like, Chris, right? This is going to be great because I'm going to have the only unique story.
Yep.
From everyone here. What is that story? And we'll link to this. I want everybody to go check it out and go read it because it's
so
great.
So on day two, we headed out of Mizpah after we slept in the haunted hotel that did not end up with a doll in my bed. And we went to the desert, like, because we basically went to the race course, right? We went picked up in the desert. We drove like 30 minutes on the highway to pick up where the race course would be, fueled up and everything. And we basically had like 20 minutes to dick around for people to show up. Like, because we're spread out, right? So we all have Motorola radios that have a 10-mile range. So we get spread out on the highway and whatever. So like I'm doing donuts in the desert and like doing videos and just, you know, being Joel. You know. And so then it's like, okay, line up, radio up, like everyone radio check, whatever. And so then we start heading out into the desert on the race course. Now we're on the course. And we were doing 45 doesn't sound very fast, but when you're on broken, crushed rock and you got sharp rocks on both sides and it's twisting and turning, blind corner. I mean, we were moving, we were hustling through. And
how is this marked? How is this course marked as you're driving along? Like, how do you know where you're going?
You don't. So Chad Hall had it loaded in Gaia, which is an off-road GPS. He had it loaded in Gaia, and then basically when there would be like a washout or a dead carcass or a cow or like something that's like, or we're going to take a left at the water tower, like this bin that collects rainwater, water tower. Okay. he'd call it all over the radio. Well, if you're only two or three back, it's not that hard. But if you're number eight back or on day three, I was the last guy. By the time you're 8 miles back, you're three turns back, right? So you're looking for the dust up there. It's like, that's where the dust is coming from. So I'm not going over there. I'm going over there, right? Like, which way do I go with the Y? Or if you really get confused, you radio up and say, you know, truck ahead of me is truck 18. Am I taking a left or a right at the, you know, mile 822.5, right? And they're like, oh, take a right, truck 18 or whatever. So, but if you're in an off-road race, you've got the Gaia map, and that's what he's leading from. So we were 12 miles in doing 45. I was the fourth truck behind Chad Hall. So there's two journalists in front of me, Chad Hall and me, and came around a left-hand turn. I was with Shil. My coworker had to bail on the trip. He couldn't come. So I ended up driving with Chevrolet Director of Communications, Chad Balch, which is a friend of mine. It worked out great and whatever. His dad used to race Nissan hard bodies. Cool stories. Super rad. So anyway, we came around a left-hander. I saw a rock towards the left. Didn't look very big. And I called out, said, rock left, going to straddle it. Cause it didn't look very big. And we went over it and straddled it. And all of a sudden we heard a boom on the back right of the truck. And the truck did a little jump, but it kept driving. And all of a sudden there was an alert saying low tire in the right. And I looked at Chad. I'm like, that truck, that rock was so, it shouldn't even make contact with the front bash plate. Like, what just happened? I'm so confused what I just hit, because it sure as heck wasn't what I saw that I was aiming to miss. I mean, I clearly missed another rock. Like, I focused on one rock and I clearly missed another rock. Obviously, I hit a rock. Like, that's obvious, right? Yeah. So now it's like, all right, we got a flat tire. Let's pull over. So we're looking for a place to pull over. We're rolling because it's a one lane thing, man. Like, it's not like, oh, pull over. Everyone pass me, right? And then Dan Edmonds in Truck 99 calls out and says, Truck 18, you're dog walking. You might want to pull over now. I think you got a problem. And
explain dog walking in a truck.
Yep, dog walking. You know, dog gets hurt in his rear leg. He starts limping, so it's kind of dragging a little. So it's kind of like dog's a little walking a little sideways, but not really forward sideways.
Or if you live in Minnesota, any truck before 1998 that you see on the road that's rusty and terrible, that thing is dog walking. So
So we pull over, and everyone pulls over behind me because, like, this sounds like the most serious thing that's happened on this trip again. When it was a blowout, everyone would just keep rolling, and Henry would stop, and you change the tire, and you keep, and Henry, you, all of us know how to change tires. So Henry would help us because it would move faster with more hands, but we're all involved. We're not just standing there watching Henry change. We all know what we're doing, right? Unhook the tire, blah, blah, blah.
It's not AAA.
This ain't AAA, man. Henry is a fast wrench. So, like, I would call us more support than Henry doing, because Henry knows what he's doing, and he'll go much quicker. So anyway, I get out of the truck, and left tire has too much camber on the driver's side. And I hit the right side, and I'm like, that's not good. So I walk around exactly the face I was making inside. And I walk around, rear quarter panel's all torn up a little. And I'm like, that's not good. And then the rear tire's blown, obviously, that part I knew. But it's sitting too far back. So the axle's too far back. That's not good. So then I'm like, what the fuck is going on? So then I stick my head in. And it's pretty evident the second I stick my head in the fender well what happened. So the aluminum drive shaft, which you can upgrade through Chevrolet Performance Parts to get a steel drive shaft if you wanted. I don't think they're expensive. Got hit the rock. It was still in one piece. There was a dent on it. And so it would have been fine. It probably would have vibrated, but it would have been fine to drive out with it. Hit the rock, clearly spun the rock back. Had I been in the old Colorado, or had I been in any of the other Colorados, I probably would have ripped the shock mount off because they're inboard. But because it was outboard, it was protected. And I talked, one of the engineers told me that I probably would have ripped it off. It hit the bottom of the axle, which where the U-bolts connect to the axle with the leaf springs. And I'm going to try and draw this, but there's photos in the story, by the way. So there's the axle, right? And then there's the U-bolts. It holds the leaf spring on. There's a top plate that holds it all together that has a pin. That basically pin is a bolt. It centers it all together. When it hit, it sheared the bolt. It sheared the pin. So it allowed everything to slide back. In one piece, by the way, it slid back on the leaf springs.
On the leaf spring. 3 inches?
Yeah. Correct. But it was all still one piece. But by sliding back, I bent one of the U-bolts by about 20%. I got a real good photo of that on the site. And then the other U-bolt slid off the top plate because it got pushed. And so it could only hang on there so long because the top plate doesn't have a centering pin anymore. So we looked at what it was and we were like, all right, this can drive out. Like, no problems, right? We can put a new tire on, we can drive it out. But we all agreed the axle should probably be slid back into place. Like, otherwise, it's going to... So
what did Henry say? What did he have
He saw the axle and said, axles looks good. And I'm like, axle looks good. And Henry was like, impressive work. Good shot.
good
my,
shot.
My favorite line from Henry was, this is going to... What was it? Hang on, I've got it pulled up.
I want everybody to know that the article is linked in the show notes today. You should go read it. The photo's there. Please go check it out. What did he say?
This is going to sound sketchy, but we might be able to do it with the truck. And that's when everyone's like, go on. So Henry basically, his idea was push it back into place with the truck. So first we tried he took the U-bolts off, which released the spring pack. I don't advise that because all of a sudden, but it released the pressure on it. And then we put a rock behind the rear passenger wheel tire with the spare on it, by the way. So now it wasn't just the wheel. And we tried to back it into the rock and just shove it in place. We tried climbing over the rock because it's four-wheel drive. So we just tried climbing over the rock. That didn't work. So then Henry said, new idea. Let's make it front-wheel drive. So Henry decided to remove the drive shaft, which that was witnessing. That was pretty cool witness. He removes the drive, like very quickly, by the way. Removes the drive shaft, like fluids flowing out of the transfer case for a second. It's okay. It's fine.
It's the desert. It's fine.
It's the desert. Everything's trying to kill you. And Tim Demetrio, which is one of the engineers, is in the driver's seat, puts it in four low. So now it's getting power to the front from the half shaft to the transfer case, locks the front so that neither of them will spin. And basically now we've made it a front wheel drive, four low, locked truck, essentially.
So it's a Maverick.
Put the rock behind it, backed into it, and we all watched the entire axle slid forward 3 inches, which was... miracles never cease. We were all just kind of like, wow, that just worked.
How do you secure it back where it needs to be? That's my question.
So Henry, Henry put in one of the backup steel shafts because why put in the shaft that's going to vibrate? It's already dented. So he put in a new drive shaft and then he took a metal mallet against a rock in the desert and tried to bend the U-bolts back. That didn't work. But A for effort. He put them in and he basically put them in backwards. So he inverted them and went like this. So basically instead of pulling, it pushed them into place, right? Because now they're bent. One of them is bent 20 degrees. So it basically is putting pressure on the axle. And so it's now in place. He tightened them down and they basically were like, don't torque the rear end, right? Like we're not going to slide around corners. Once we hit pavement, that's hard packed. We're going to just go really slow and we make our turn, whatever. Because as long as it's tight enough, right, there's no pin to center it, but we've now put it in place. So we cranked them down using his impact wrench and all that stuff. We drove out of there. We got on the highway. Tim Demetrio was like, you know, truck 18, tell me if that thing's driving okay. Do you notice anything wrong? And I was just like, man, I cannot. I mean, it pulls a smidge to the left, But otherwise, like, this thing's great. I just drove out of there. Like, it's no big deal. Like, we're good to go, right? Like, so, I mean, look, we could have drove it out. We could have put the spare tire and just drove it out of there. Like, it would have worked, right? With the axle, like, wrong, whatever. Like, I didn't break the truck, like, to the point that it was undrivable. That truck.
I mean, you broke the truck. You broke it.
It could have driven out without anything other than a spare tire.
That doesn't mean it's not broken.
So, they went to Napa Auto Parts that night in Fallon. They bought two U-bolts. And a pin, a centering pin, and it was $8. It was $8. Yeah. And he's like, 10 minutes, and we could put this thing back together 100%. Like literally 8,000 parts, and this thing would be. We've already replaced the drive shaft. It's already centered up. And so I, well, can I finish what I started in this truck? They're like, nah, like just finish in the backup truck. Who gives a crap at this point? I was like, man.
Was the backup truck a Volkswagen Beetle?
No, they had one extra Chevy Colorado ZR2 in case something actually catastrophic happened. They had
so
one
is this
extra
your first calamity?
Define calamity. I mean, thing drove out.
I mean, was this your first, oopsie. Oh, no.
On a press vehicle or in general?
On a press vehicle. No, we know he's messed up.
I think in the history of doing this over 13 years, I think I've curbed two wheels. I've curbed a Bobcat ran into a car that I was a Mazda Speed 3 that I wasn't even in the car at the time it was parked, but he backed into it. That screwed that car pretty good. And I slid into a snowbank in a Mitsubishi Evo once.
Okay, so we got like. Yeah. I was going to say, what is the worst thing you've seen another journalist do?
Oh, hang on. Personally witnessed or like seen photos? Be definitive.
Personally witnessed. Well, I don't give a shit. Tell me whatever story you want to tell.
I mean, there
me
was a whole story. I mean, someone on a McLaren drive took a McLaren and they rolled off a cliff.
Wow.
What have you? I think it was on Jalopnik or somewhere.
Yeah. What have you witnessed? What's
what have I witnessed?
Firsthand?
I mean, where are you? I mean,
I was in the driver's seat. It was this.
I've been there when someone totaled out an F10 M5 at Road America in Canada Corner. I've been there when someone did basically the same thing in a Lexus RCF at the same corner, different journalist. I've been there when someone went from, they meant to go to third, but they went to first with a, I wrote America with a Hyundai. Hyundai.
Dude,
Road
America
coupe.
Eats them up, dude.
Yeah.
The chick from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel plowed an M3 into a wall, and they had to put a chicane in after the Johnsonville corner, the decreasing radius corner that's there. Usually mm-hmm. goes down towards Canada Corner, and she blew it up, and then they put a chicane in.
So the event I go to, the one that I just said that all those things have happened, and the one I'm going to again in May, they run a chicane there at that event for that. I mean, off track. I don't know, man. People have done. I mean, I've reported someone who is passing on double yellows with oncoming traffic coming on a press launch once to the automaker, and I was like, I don't want to be anywhere near this person. That person shouldn't be. I didn't even know the person, by the way. It was really weird. Like, I didn't know who this person was. Never met him in my life, but they were driving recklessly. If I'd been in that car with that person, it wouldn't pull over. I'm getting a lift. Like, there's zero chance I'm driving with you. This is absolutely insanity.
We've had a couple of people like that in the rally, and they are no longer allowed. You know, you behave
like
yourself like that.
Time and
you
place, can't right? Time and place.
Yeah.
Yeah. Time and place.
This is public Mr. roads. Fetter, these aren't racetracks.
Exactly. I missed you very much. We have to go. We've got another interview in like 15, 20 minutes. I greatly enjoyed your company today. You've made this episode much better because you were here.
It's been a pleasure. We should do this more often.
We should. Now that we can do it like this, I think we should make a point to.
We can definitely do that. What? When is this airing?
Tomorrow.
Okay. Well, make sure to promote. I'll promote. This is good. I like this. This is fun.
It was a good time. I look forward to doing it again. And everybody else, we will see you. When will we see them? Friday?
On Friday, Chris. We're going to see them on Friday.
All right. See you later, guys.
Bye, guys.
Take care.